Hello and welcome to Total Film's Last Picture Show. I'm Matt Matem, Deputy Editor of Total Film, and the elevator pitch for this is, it's the end of the world and you have one last day to spend at the cinema. What four films are you programming? Today's guests are a filmmaking duo, two brothers who've been working together for 25 years now, since they were graduate students, and they rose to prominence directing episodes of Arrested Development, and then they got the attention of Steven Soderbergh and George Clooney, who produced their first film, Welcome to Collinwood. After that, they had box office success with You, Me and Dupree, ahead of executive producing and directing on beloved sitcom Community. But they found international recognition for their work with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, directing four of the Infinity Saga's biggest and best films, which are Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Captain America Civil War, Avengers Infinity War, and Avengers Endgame. Since then, they've made Passion Project Cherry with Tom Holland, and now they're releasing their latest huge action epic, The Gray Man, which is in select cinemas and streaming on Netflix now.
What do you know about the Sierra program?
Reckless mystery men you guys send in when you can't officially send anyone else.
The Gray Man.
Lloyd. I got an urgent locate and destroy.
That could be fun. The man's got some street cred.
You hurt?
I mean, my ego's a little bruised.
A pleasure to welcome to Total Film's Last Picture Show the filmmaking team that is Anthony Russo and Joe Russo. Before we get stuck into your cinematic programme for your last day at the movies, let's talk about your new film, The Gray Man, an action-packed espionage thriller starring Ryan Gosling and Chris Evans. It's something you first started working on a long time ago, wasn't it, when you were making Captain America The Winter Soldier? So what was it about it that's kind of kept your interest for so long?
It was a great novel. It was a great read. It was one of those books that I read in about 2 days. Couldn't put it down. And Anthony and I like excess, and we like propulsive thrillers, and the action in it was excessive, and you know, the read was propulsive, so it begged to be converted into a visual story. I worked on a draft of it during Winter Soldier as a potential next film for us, but then we ended up doing three more movies for Marvel, so we put it aside. Circled back to it years later when we started our company Agbo. We bought the rights back from Sony. Took it out to the market and set it up at Netflix. They're a great partner.
Do you think it would have been a very different film had you have made it back then? Kind of, have you sort of learned a lot along the way that's kind of influenced how this ended up being made?
It's hard to answer that hypothetical question because the process of making a movie is so complex. You know, until you actually do it, you don't really know what it is. But I will say this. Over the course of the Marvel movies, we have been able to find such an amazing collaborative team in terms of how we execute action specifically that I think the fact that we've worked together now for so many years over so many films, we have developed a pretty sophisticated process with one another. And I think that, you know, that certainly speaks to our ability to pull off certain complicated ideas.
Key to The Gray Man is this sort of cat and mouse aspect between Ryan Gosling's character, Sierra Six, and Chris Evans, Lloyd Hansen. When you were thinking about casting these two roles, were you kind of thinking in pairs or did one kind of come first?
We always try to think in pairs. You know, it gives you a feeling of what you're going for. It gives you a tone. But, you know, we're fortunate enough that somebody at Chris's level was interested in playing a villain. And that's obviously a tricky role to cast. It's why you rarely see these sorts of showdown movies. It's hard to find, you know, somebody who's at the peak of their career who's interested in playing a sociopath or a very unlikable character on screen. Chris obviously told us that he feels like he was at a comfortable place post-Marvel and was really interested in taking risks. And so we really wrote the role up for him. And Gosling is just a dream to work with. I mean, he's an actor's actor. It's, you know, we've been obsessed with him for the last 2 decades, just like everyone else. So it was a great complimentary casting situation where, you know, we're just fortunate enough to get two guys really at the top of their game.
Come on. Hey, sunshine.
You must be Lloyd.
What gave it away?
The white pants, the trash stash. It leans Lloyd. Where's the drive? Got it here somewhere. It's hard to see. Is that it?
I mean, and on one level, you know, the movie is designed as a mano a mano, and for us between the hero and the villain. So to have two actors of equal sort of consequence, you know, especially at the level of Chris and the level of Ryan, it was an incredible privilege and for us to be able to play with that.
And so Chris, in a sense, he played the ultimate good guy in your Marvel movies. Yeah. So were you talking then about kind of doing something very different with him? Had you kind of thrown any ideas around during those movies?
We definitely did. Look, we had an amazing experience working with Chris on the Captain America character. I mean, it's just like, you know, to be able to explore that character for so many years over four films, that was a very unique creative experience for all of us. So yeah, we got to know Chris very well through that period, creatively and personally. And we started to understand, you know, things he was capable of, started to think about things, you know, very different from Captain America. I mean, certainly on one level, it tickled all of us to sort of go to work again on a character that is so, you know, couldn't get further from Captain America. And it's fun, and I think it was very liberating for Chris, too. You know, it's fun to play, to not have to carry the weight of the movie on your shoulders as the lead character. You know, you can sort of be a little more whimsical and indulgent in your performances. You know, you don't always have to make sure the audience is constantly tethered to you on an emotional level. So it was really fun to see Chris work that way.
There's kind of a reference to 007 at one point in the film, and then there's kind of a moment in Henry Jackman's score where I felt like he was almost invoking the James Bond movies. So were those films a big influence on you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
For sure. And we're being self-referential. I mean, we're certainly swimming in a pool that's been swam in many times before. So we're very aware of, you know, the legacy of films that have preceded this. You know, Anth and I have a hard time taking anything seriously. So there's always a level of biting humor. You know, self-awareness. So I think, you know, there's no universe where we're going to make a movie like this and not have a 007 joke in there somewhere.
This is Six. He'll be looking after the house while Donald is away.
Just the two exits?
Yes, that's right.
Six is an odd name.
Yeah, just 007 was taken.
And talking of 007, obviously you have Ana de Armas in the film as well. She's just come from, you know, has that amazing scene in the No Time to Die.
Yeah.
So was she kind of very action ready when she turned up for the Gray Man?
She was. But yeah. I think she was even more sort of interested in like learning and growing, which is amazing. You know, there were many members of the cast where this movie represented an opportunity to engage in a type of performance that even they may have done some of before, but never to this level. And Anna was certainly approached the action challenge in this film that way. She trained extremely hard. She studied very, very hard. Just, you know, we have amazing advisors, former CIA agents, former Special Forces agents that worked very closely with the cast in terms of understanding behavior, psychology, et cetera, technique. And Anna really, really hit it hard.
Is it hard to know when you're at that casting stage who's actually going to be able to handle the sort of demands that a sort of an action film on this scale?
It is a little bit of guesswork, but you're right. Like it you know, the physicality required is unique, and it's a different kind of skill set. It's interesting having made superhero films for those actors to maintain that physique for that period of time is very difficult. It's hard on them. It's hard on their bodies. It's mentally exhausting, especially when Anthony and I are sitting at the monitor eating pizza. You know, when you do an action film, you're asking quite a bit of an actor. They're making quite a number of sacrifices, and they're engaging in a lot of really intense training. You know, I think it was an interesting experience for Ryan because he'd never done anything of this scale before. He was an absolute trooper. You know, he would do 2 months of training, and then Anthony and I would come up with a different idea and throw out those 2 months of training. Never complained once, and always exerted all effort and energy to try and make it the best story that we could.
And The Gray Man obviously features many huge set pieces. how much of that is sort of in the script when it sort of goes to the actors? How much is sort of developed as you're going along, you know, and then how much, if at all, does it change on the day when you're actually sort of filming it?
There's definitely an evolution to it, right? We were very fortunate in the sense that we got to start with a great novel that had a number of these set pieces in it. Certainly at the script stage, there's a whole new layer added to that process. But we work with an incredible team of collaborators who it's very hard to come up with that level of action. So we go through an involved process that involves conceptual artists sort of working with us to come up with certain concepts and ideas about the various sequences. We will actually animate certain sequences as a way to test drive them and explore them. We will work with our stunt team and actually shoot sections of the action, sections of the fights in a stunt gym, and we'll edit it and to feel it out. We will start to collaborate with the actors as they get involved and feel out what their point of view is on the action. So it's a really elaborate layering process and a long sort of process of evolution to get to the point where you're ready to shoot something that is this complex. And again, we're trying to make the most exciting movie we possibly can. And there's definitely a bit of experimentation and trial and error in terms of finding that movie.
And you made Cherry, which had a very different role for Tom Holland in it, and you've just made The Gray Man, which has this very different role for Chris Evans in. In your next movie, The Electric State, are you going to be subverting Chris Pratt's image in that?
Maybe.
Chris Pratt is the president of the United States. I don't know. We'll keep under wraps Mr. Pratt's character for now, but yeah, we're very excited to be going to work with him.
Let's talk about your sort of movie-going experience. Like, do you remember the first film you saw at the cinema?
I don't remember the first film, but I remember the first R-rated film we saw at the cinema.
The Blues Brothers,
yeah.
It was probably an early Disney movie, right?
Yeah.
I think I remember seeing Bambi in the cinema.
Let's dive straight into it. What would be your first film on the program for this last picture show?
So, if you wanted them to have a good time, I would show them? Kingpin.
Kingpin's a good one.
Yeah.
Roy Munson had it all.
You're on a gravy train with biscuit wheels.
He was the golden boy of the bowling world.
Watch the door. Want to make more money?
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun, though, isn't it?
Double or nothing, I can pick up that spare.
Well, take that bet.
How do you do that?
But one night...
Sometimes a bowler just has to face the music.
He lost his innocence.
And that bowler...
It's you, Roy.
And the one thing he needed most...
It's a beautiful morning.
Now, he's fallen as low as he can go.
You still owe me another month's rent. If I were you, I would start doing some tongue exercises before Friday.
But he'll do anything to get back to the big time. He just needs an Amish kid.
You struck a hell of a ball.
To lend him a hand.
Kingpin is one of my all-time favorite comedies, no question. I mean, I think those guys are geniuses.
Yeah. I remember it being like an electrifying experience seeing that movie.
I think we saw that movie two or three times in the first
two it was weeks. Like, it was an obsession.
We went back to see it. We were laughed so hard. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever laughed so hard in a movie theater. Maybe Holy Grail, but Kingpin just had me on the floor of the theater. I'll watch it anytime it comes on. I just have less time now to channel surf HBO and Cinemax, waiting for Kingpin to show up.
Now I know what we're doing on the flight to India.
Yeah, I just thought of that. I need to download it on my phone, so I just have it on. But Woody Harrelson is just so hilarious.
Do you have a favorite scene from it?
I think it's the final showdown, the bowling showdown.
Is that where, I saw it once when it came out, basically, but is that scene where his sort of comb over?
Yeah,
it's like, the blow.
You know, it's like it's draping across his head, and then he...
Yeah,
he's so pumping simple, his fist every time he scores a strike. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got off on a great light note.
You know, a movie popped into my head is I Soliti Ignoti, or Big Deal on Madonna Street, which is a movie Joe and I, an Italian film by Mario Monicelli that Joe and I love so much, and we actually wrote a movie inspired by it called Welcome to Collinwood.
Not since Rafifi has there been a crime so bold in nature, so daring in scope. This is The Big Deal, the shocking and unbelievable story behind The Crime of the Century.
It has an incredible cast, Vittorio Gassman and...
social commentary.
It's sort of set in the wake of, you know, Rome in the ruins after World War II and... about a group of petty thieves who are kind of all in bad places in life, and they kind of find one another to attempt a robbery.
It's going to be the score of a life.
That is very much their, that is very important to them for a variety of reasons, personal reasons, and it ends in...
tragedy.
Horrible failure. But there's something left at the end of the movie, which is just sort of this shared experience that they all had together, which ends up being something, which is, it's kind of a beautiful narrative. There's a sadness and a hopefulness hidden within a very joyful experience and comedic experience that I think feels appropriate for something as awful as The Last Picture Show.
That's exactly how I was going to describe Kingpin.
Okay, yeah, okay.
It's the exact same way. The sadness and a...
That's our theme for this idea.
The other one I'd program, just so they had like a good emotional experience, would be My Life as a Dog.
In on there.
Jag ska berätta allt. När hon orkar ska jag berätta allt. Hon har precis den humorn. Historier ur livet, det är sånt hon gillar.
Wow, I haven't seen that for years. But I do remember the first time I watched it, like being profoundly moved by it. It was just like a compelling story about growing up, like a really tragic, you know, had all the trials and tribulations of what it means to grow up. I think I was going to school in England at University of East Anglia. And, you know, this is before, obviously, we had access to phones. And so I had to go, I was going to the library and checking out movies and sitting there watching them in cubicles. I was probably 19 or 20 at the time. And that was the first time I saw it, sitting in a cubicle at the library at University of East Anglia, trying to hide my tears.
And so the final film in the program, Lawrence of Arabia.
I've been seconded to the Arab Bureau. Of course I'm the man for the job. What is the job, by the way?
Have you no fear, English?
My fear is my concern.
We need a miracle.
They hope to gain their freedom. I'm going to give it to them.
The man who gives victory in battle is prized beyond every other man.
It's going to be fun.
There's something about the infinite feeling of that horizon in that movie as we all segue into a no more movie future. That seemed to speak to me.
And the length of it.
Yeah, and the length of it, not wanting the moment to end, having a nice long film.
One of the great opening shots of all time.
You know, I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of seeing that movie in a theater and the proper scope, but it does give you this feeling of vastness.
It's sumptuous.
Yeah, and it's about as big as cinema gets, you know, so it's nice to go out with a bang.
A few kind of quick fire questions as well to sort of end on for this, but we always ask kind of popcorn, are you serving salty or sweet?
Salty.
Salty, yeah.
Do you like trailers in the cinema or do you like no trailers? Do you like?
I like trailers. I mean, I go, half the reason I go is for the trailers.
For The Last Picture Show, we need to have 24 hours of trailers.
Trailers prior to it, yeah.
What would you be playing as the screen burns on this kind of last day? What movie soundtrack would you like to have playing?
Cinema Paradiso.
That's a good one. That's a good one for
it's
just
the cinema
the
burns around you.
But I would pick Morricone's score for The Mission, which I just find the most beautiful piece of music I've ever heard.
In terms of your formative cinema going experiences, obviously you kind of famously worked together. Did you just always kind of go to the cinema and watch movies together when you were growing up?
You know, obviously it started with our parents. Our dad was a big fan of The Late Show. And then, you know, Saturday matinees were a big deal on television back then. We didn't go to the theater that much. I mean, we were immigrant family, and it was a little bit of a treat to be able to go to the theater. So a lot of our content consumption came from television and sort of watching movies around the clock. We had a great Friday night late show called Big Chuck and Little John, which were this comedy duo that would show genre movies and make fun of them. So, you know, we watched a lot of Hammer films and Godzilla movies. You know, we have a very strange, eclectic tastes and influences.
And were you always on the same wavelength about films, even from a young age?
Yeah, I think so.
Seems like it, you know. Seems like it. We would just have a passion for movies. I think maybe that's part of, like, where our bond started with movies, is just sometimes being the only guys we know that have a passion for a particular movie is one another. So, you know.
Thanks so much to the Russo brothers, Anthony and Joe. The Grey Man is in select cinemas and streaming on Netflix now. So, to recap, the Russo Brothers' last picture show program is Kingpin, I Soliti Ignoti, aka Big Deal on Madonna Street, and also released as Persons Unknown in the UK, My Life as a Dog, and Lawrence of Arabia. And you can hear Noomi Rapace, Joe Wright, and Radio Silence, and even some members of the Total Film team sharing their last picture shows on previous episodes of this podcast, which are available now.
That was the Last Picture Show podcast from Total Film. Let us know what four films you'd watch at the end of the world. You can tweet us on @TotalFilm or connect with us on Facebook or our Instagram page.